15 to 20 million jobs.
Oh, I am your future.
You have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve the entire Philadelphia and tri-state area, and people can listen on the internet from anywhere in the USA or around the world simply by going to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. And as I always say, if you received our email this morning, send it off to someone else and invite them to tune in right now so that we can have a family of listeners continue to grow as we spread good news about things happening in America for the future of our children and also our grandchildren. On board today, we have our great panel members, and they include Mark Andel, as you know, the founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Connerly, the East Coast Vice President of SCORE, Rich Logis, Principal of RJL Technology Integration, and our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. And as you know, I'm Michael Blihash, your host, and I would like to say thank you to the people that stopped me in my travels. I thank you for inviting me to the various events, letting me know what you think about the election, what you think about the businesses returning to America. This is where it all begins. After many years of silence, the last few years we have grown our voices. The little voices have now turned into a big voice. And now that summer is here, a lot of people will be out buying summer season items. It's a great opportunity to go out and look at the labels and speak up to the store personnel and the owners, as well as the business managers there at the store. Let them know that you're concerned and ask them point blank, as I do, how do you expect yourself, your family, your friends, and your children to have a job if we don't turn this whole thing around? We cannot be a sales point for another country anymore. We have to be a sales point for our country now until we get to that 50-50 balance. Speaking up, by the way, will certainly encourage store owners to make a decision. As Larkin Connerly said some time ago, store owners are already making decisions. They've made decisions as to what they're going to be selling in October, November, and December for the Christmas season holiday. Now's the time for you to speak up, because if they do have something they would like to order, maybe it's time for them to speak up to their merchandisers and say, I want to have more American made so that I can satisfy my customers. And remember one more thing before I go to our panel. Just as you listen to the opinions of others, how you look, how you feel, you know, what's happening, store owners are also listening to the requests of their customers, because they don't want to see you walk out the door and shop elsewhere, or maybe shop on the internet where you'll be able to find something made in the USA. I've been looking on the internet for a lot of things. I'm going to start pushing the idea of exposing, not exposing, but listing on the internet where the product is made. So, first of all, I want to say again, thank you to Rich Logis, Mark Andel, and Larkin Connerly for being here with us and helping us spread the word. We are really one of the great news bears in America. With that, I'm going to start off today with Mark Andel. How's everything going on in your world?
Excellent, Mike, and good morning, Larkin and Rich and Henry and listeners. Mike, I just came from my daughter's moving up day. So Jessie's, 13, moving up from the 8th grade to 9th grade. And it was a big ceremony, 170-plus people, and I was glad to see they did the Pledge of Allegiance right before it. Me and a couple guys behind goes, geez, I'm glad they still do that. So it was real nice to see public school, but proud of Jessie, you know, young, and to see all these 8th graders, Mike, gives me hope always to see all them smiling faces. It was a great day. We've been just rocking and rolling with the Made in America store. Our brand new store is doing real well. People are coming in from all over the country. It's that time of year. School's out this week, so if you have a relative in, a relative in or somebody visiting from out of town to my store to see it and appreciate it. And it's really neat. I don't know if you've seen, but last week Saturday we we welcomed our 500th bus at the Made in America store. And Mike, that's quite a milestone because, you know, I never really thought about it until that day happened. We were blessed with some local news, surprised me, and the bus came from Oklahoma. These people, the first bus was from Tennessee, was $4.99, I had to tell them, you know. I said, hey, the next bus behind you. But they stayed. So we had a Tennessee group and we had an Oklahoma group, and boy, did these people love not only being the 500th bus, but, you know, celebrating our big day. But they just respect what we're doing for America. And I had a great 3 hours with these people. They don't want to leave. But it was a great day. So the Made in America store is on the move, and our movement and your radio show, we are making a difference together.
Wonderful. Mark, I can't tell you enough how pleased I am that you are part of our team, because a lot of people tell me that they're going to the falls. They're going to both sides of the falls, and they're going to stop at the store. They said they see your sign at the New York side falls, mentioning American Made store. And so I said, well, you got to stop in there. You got to do it. Look what he has. And if you can get to Elma, I don't know exactly how many miles away Elma is from the Horseshoe Falls, but
about 40 miles, Mike. And I think Rich ran into some Buffalonians. We'll let him tell us about that, too.
Very good. Rich, how are you doing?
Good morning, guys. Good morning to all of our listeners. You know, Mark, it did happen. My wife had a friend visiting from Poland. We took a little boat tour around Fort Lauderdale, and there was a group in front saying, oh my God, it is so hot here. And I don't know why. I probably just watched a commercial or read an article, you know, one of the articles about you. And my wife said, oh, listen to them complaining about the heat. And I said, yeah, they're probably from Buffalo. And I just said it loudly, and I don't know why I said that. And the guy turns around and says, hey, I'm from Buffalo. And I said, oh, this is – of all the cities – how many cities are in America? And I picked the one, Michael, that the guy was right in front of me, right?
And Rick, my wife Jackie, we were talking about you last night, how you're a little fired up, you know, and how that might have went down. And I said, oh, no, I'm sure Rich somehow
– Now, Rich, when you started talking to the guy, did you make sure that he goes to Mark's?
Mark bailed me out, and we started talking. He told me how he lives down here now. He lived in Buffalo for 35 years. I said, listen, I was dumb for 35 years also and lived in the country. I said, welcome. And I said, you know, I got a really good buddy, Mark Handel, in Elma, in Buffalo, the Made in America stores. And the first thing he says, Mark, are those the stores in the mall? I said, yeah, those are his stores. And he said he just bought some houseware, you know, some things for the house.
Oh, very good.
And so if he's listening now, he said he was going to listen. So, Billy, if you're listening, this is Rich. If I find out you're not listening, next time on that boat, I'm going to make sure an iguana jumps on you from that tree.
Well, let's find out if he's listening. He's going to come and see me, Rich. I'm going to give him a shirt, you know, that says, because China's a long drive to work. We'll make sure. If he's listening, come to the Elma store.
And Larkin Connolly, how are you doing?
Good morning, Michael, Mark, Rich, Henry, and all of our listeners. My apologies for missing last week, but I found myself of all places in Washington, D.C. But I have to tell you what happened to me last night. This is one of the most amazing events I've had in a very, very long time. An associate of mine who lives up north and owns property and was born and raised in the north of Florida, called me up and said, I'm going to be in town. Would you and your wife like to have dinner with me? So we made arrangements, and we had dinner last night. Now, I know this guy. He's an associate of mine, a great guy. I work with him day in and day out. And I thought to myself, the three of us or the four of us, that ought to be a great dinner. I got to the restaurant. I was early because I had to drive the longest distance, didn't want to be late, walked in, was shown to a table, and there were five places. And I said, are you sure this is the right table? This is, in fact, the right table. So along with himself, he brought his girlfriend, and he brought his father. And his father is the 12-term congressman from Florida. Served 24 years in the House of Representatives. Now, it was a very boring meal to me. You all know that I'm not a political junkie, and I had nothing to say to this guy. We talked for 2 hours. When I was finished talking, I looked down and went, oops, I forgot to eat my dinner. I had to pack my dinner up and bring it home for lunch today. The fellow's a Democrat. My friend's longtime girlfriend worked 3 years for Condoleezza Rice in the White House in national security and got promoted for the last 5 years in the Bush White House and worked directly for President Bush on his national security team. So there was no conversation at this table that had anything to do with politics in the current circumstances that we're facing. My mouth was agape. My wife would reach over and hit my bottom chin to close my mouth. And my questions, I had no remarks. I'm going to make a remark to a 24-year servant of the House of Representatives. I was fascinated with what came out of his mouth. I was fascinated about all of his memories. And back in those days when he was serving, I was a political junkie at 14 years old. I was out buying Wall Street Journals and the Newsweek, and my parents thought I was a little on the wacko. Well, of course, I am a little on the wacko side. But, for a 14 or 15-year-old, I was just fascinated with politics. So he was bringing up names. My congressman from home, Congressman Flood, I couldn't believe he remembered his name. And he said, no, as a matter of fact, he was down the hall and across a little bit from me for the 24 years I served. And I went, oh, my Lord. And the names and the memories. And we talked at great length about what happened in Congress. How did we get where we are? And he said, I retired in 1987 for a reason, because it wasn't the same anymore. It was changing. And I said, well, Congressman, sir, you have to tell me, where'd it come from? What precipitated this change? And he said in an absolutely nonpartisan remark, it started with Newt Gingrich, right on his doorstep. He started the whole Democrats hate Republicans, Republicans hate Democrats. That visceral relationship developed right on his doorstep when he became House Speaker. And they couldn't react fast enough to get him out of the seat he was in. He served one of the shortest terms as a speaker. And no support for any particular presidential candidate. My Republican friend at the table said she was like me. She didn't know what she was going to do. It's a very confusing circumstance. And we've got 5 months to continue to think about what we're doing. But what a crowd. What a dinner. I at one point got in the car and I said to my wife, darn, I wish all three of the guys could have been here for this. I wish they could have sat at the table and just listened to just unbelievable discussion and such intelligence and knowledge and understanding of how government really, really works, how it's supposed to work, and why it worked for so many years, and then all of a sudden stopped.
All of a sudden it fell apart. Yep.
It fell apart. There's no question. And I don't, arguably, I'm not sure that I would say it was Newt Gingrich's fault, but he has a better grip on the history of the House than I do. So I listened very intently, and I was also told by the young lady at the table, really kind of funny, Marco Rubio is going to run. Has decided he's going to run for a seat.
Yes, that was announced. It was announced. So God bless him.
I didn't know that. I said I'm surprised to hear that. I don't know how I missed it, but I came home last night and looked it up, and sure enough, on the 22nd, he had announced that he was going to. Is going to run for a seat. So,
well, Larkin, that was very good. I'm glad you told us that he decided to get out after he saw what was happening. And it's true. It's almost 30 years ago that this nightmare has been placed on our doorstep. And unfortunately, in the 30 years, no American leader has been concerned about creating a ladder of opportunity for Americans to have jobs, job skills, and be able to support themselves. It's been all of this, you know, give government, will be your mother, father, sister, brother, your provider. That's no good. And that's what's killing.
He named a list of Republican congressmen, all of whom I knew, all Easterners, and just went through the list, and he said, there's not a one of them whose house I've not been in. There's not a one of them whose children I don't know. There's not a one of them that weren't my compatriots in the process of running a government. He said, that doesn't exist now. But it's not even close to existing now. Bitter enemies. And it's visceral is the word he continued to use. It's just absolutely visceral.
I would have liked to ask him one question, Larkin, if I was able to meet this gentleman. And I would ask what so many people tell me, and that is, why can't we have some of these national-focused issues placed on a referendum? So then our leaders that we elected stay in Washington and vote upon the things that we decided we want to do. Do we want to continue to go in debt? Do we want to agree with these trade agreements? Do we want to help people without having them be pushed into skills? None of that's on the ballot, so the American people are really left out of the process. And that's why many of them are discouraged. Even at Larkin, you know where our office is located. And talking with the visitors, they say it's unbelievable how there is no focus whatsoever on jobs and concern for neighborhoods where the people live, or the schools, how the schools are doing, what the schools are doing with those kids once they graduate. There's no accountability. So that started 30 years ago, and for 30 years, people don't even remember. Many of the younger people have no idea what it is to live without an iPhone and all these technology backups. They don't have any idea. When somebody says, oh, you should know all that, you should be able to Google it instantly, find out. Well, people in the middle age and older age don't do those things that easily, like the younger people. But the Congress should have said, well, wait a minute, all these technologies are coming around. We have to get those skills in our schools. We're paying for a lot of that schooling with our federal monies coming from taxes to the federal government, and yet we have no say.
And in other words, there was some talk about the inability to rule if there's no give and take. If you can't compromise, then it turns into a black and white issue. And the, eliminating the pork, and it was pork, we all know that, eliminating the pork that congressmen had to play with put them in a position where it's either black or white. There is no gray. There is no, hey, listen, this is important to me and important to my people, and this is important to you and your people, so let's meet in the middle and do both.
And that is why, Larkin, maybe I'm off, but that is why I like the idea of three or four parties. There's not just a black or white. You have many shades of color sitting at the table. As I said before, when one of the sides walks away from the table, the other side is sitting there alone. If you have four parties and one walks away, you still negotiate with the three.
Well, the issue remains in place. You can have 16 parties, and if you have a visceral atmosphere in that chamber, you're not going to get anything done. I don't care if there are 28 parties. I don't care if each person represents a different party. When there's a visceral atmosphere, there's a refusal or an inability to compromise. There's an inability to have any give and take whatsoever. And that's what needs to be fixed. We need to understand that all conservatives are not right and all progressives are all wrong.
Right.
That is wrong.
Larkin, here's something else which I see being part of a radio broadcast and working in the media. I see that the media is a big part of this problem because they carry the details of all the ugly stories, but very little presentation about what can be done to unite the people, show how the businesses are doing something. Like David Muir, he gives a minute or two to something special. Why can't 5% of the news broadcast be showing something positive to give people ideas? They don't want to do that because they say bad news sells. But I think, and Rich, I'll let you answer this, I think that a lot of the bad news outlets are starting to lose their base.
Well, Michael and Larkin, welcome back. You've been sorely missed. and welcome. As always, I listen to you, and like everyone on the show, I've learned a hell of a lot over the years. If I were going to sum it up, one sort of simple, perhaps oversimplified statement, Larkin, I would say, and guys, everyone knows, I think, on this show and in our listener base, that I have worn my as objective and independent badge of honor on my sleeve as much as I have been able to, credibly, on this show. And what I really think has been the root of the problem for the Republican Party nationally, which is not to say that it's been about every member, every elected official, and every Republican voter who identifies as a Republican. Virtually all Republicans I know are good people. They care about the country. But I really think what it boils down to, guys, and Larkin, if you want to add to this, fine, or disagree, fine. This is a party that is grossly, grossly out of touch with its end user base. And the questions of why that has happened, I don't think they're that complex. Politicians have made politics is a family business now for politicians. It runs multiple generations. This is not just true with Republicans, of course. What is it about the fact that the Democratic Party, over time, more and more over time, has more and more cornered markets, while more and more Republicans and independents who could lean Republican have stayed home? And the reason that that has happened, in my inexpert opinion, is simply because of the offering, and I would add, Larkin, what you said, which is a tremendous lack of leadership. You know, Barack Obama was elected 91 months ago, and people are sitting around going, how is it possible, why is it this way that Trump is doing so well? Whether you like him or not, or will vote for him or not, is a totally different discussion. But the assessment of why he's doing well and why he got the most votes of any Republican in the history of the Republican Party in the primary, I really don't think is that complex, guys. I don't. And I think it's because the offering is more in line with what the majority of Americans, Larkin, are looking for. They're looking for jobs to come back. They're looking for there's a legitimate concern. There's a legitimate concern about the safety and national security of this country. There's a concern about who the hell is coming in and out of here. Now, at the end of the day, if Donald Trump helps to fix some of those issues, if he's elected, then we'll do that. But the reality is no one else has talked about it. They just haven't. And the Democrats, Larkin, never have to work for their votes. They don't. I know you've disagreed with me on this point, to say they don't have markets cornered. I think they do. And I don't think they have to work much for their votes. And I promise you guys something. I promise you guys this. If Clinton is indicted and she stays in the race, she has almost, it's not quite 100, she has almost the same chances as winning if she's indicted. You need to think about that. That's my opinion. And, Larkin, that's the premise under which I'm operating. And if that's extreme and exaggerated and melodramatic, then so be it. But as a famous man once said, and he's our audio engineer, Henry Chaplinsky, he once said, the difference between desperation and urgency is desperation is urgency 2 minutes too late. And damn, was he right about that.
Very true.
You have a tendency to talk about the current circumstances and very little remedy. You're right. We have a security problem in this country. The fact that the gun owner in Orlando called the FBI and they ignored the call indicates there's a problem. It's not a Democratic problem. It's not a Republican problem. We have a problem. And we need to solve it. So the fact that we take that issue and turn it into a political issue and want to argue whether the Democrats are responsible or the Republicans are responsible is just kind of crazy. So what do we have? We have one candidate on the left that's saying everything that has been said in the last 8 years and has proven to be inadequate in protecting our land. We have a candidate on the right who is so far out of touch with reality, it's not funny. I mean, completely. He's going to take all immigrants, regardless of where they're from, and send them home? Really? That's virtually impossible. We don't have an agency in this country big enough and strong enough to pull off a move like that. So what am I saying? That's not going to work. I can't vote for somebody who's going to tell me he's going to take every illegal immigrant and throw them out of the country. That's just not going to work. It's not viable. It's not reasonable. So we have one person over here regurgitating everything that's been said over the last 8 years with nothing new, the same old gobbledygook. And we have somebody on the right who thinks that victory is going to be a part and parcel to just being crazier in hell, just suggesting things that are so wild that people are going, yeah, let's do that. Let's run them all out of here. No, no. No, we have, 4.5 million legitimate Islamic members of our society that now all of a sudden we're saying, I mean, I thought we learned that lesson with Japan. So let's be reasonable. That's all. Let's talk about solutions. Let's quit this petty argument. And I'm telling you what, this is going to be the most worthless campaign because at no point are they going to talk about anything except calling each other names.
And you know, Larkin, I agree with you on that because everywhere I go, everybody that I speak to says they're disappointed to see the way things are going at this point. And by the way, every day, all of the supporters of the Buy American Made campaign are taking a hard look at what happened to America's economy and the result of what we happen to have in this country right now because of the lack of jobs. And not one candidate is focused on that. That is the winning solution, focusing on how do we support ourselves and not depend on government. And yet nobody's doing it. They're talking about name calling. I would like to see, working in human services as well, I'd like to see every American be registered just like they have a Social Security card. If you're here and you have no problems, you're here forever. Get on the payroll, you know, do the best that you can, pay your taxes, raise your family. Your kids are already in our schools, but they don't want to address that. They want to keep all these delusional ideas continuing, these distractions. And yet the general public is not screaming, how are we going to give all this stuff away for free without people working and paying their taxes?
Yeah. And, you know, Mike, I'd like to say, you know, Larkin and Rich, I agree with both of you. And Larkin, on that Orlando shooting, and God bless the families and the people on that terrific, you know, terrible event. I'm a gun owner, and I believe in the Second Amendment. And that, you're right, isn't a Democratic or Republican, and it shouldn't be used for political gain. You know, I look at even Belgium, the nightclub shooting, which they don't seem to bring up, and I believe they are not allowed gun rights there, and you still have the same thing with ISIS happening there, and I think that should be compared. But very, very tough times, and it does need to be worked out. When you look at that gun shop owner that came on TV, and I don't know his name, but I credit him, he had called, this guy was caught twice by the FBI, or could have been caught twice. He was brought up to be involved with ISIS. And then the gun shop owner called and said, this guy's suspicious. He's trying to buy bulletproof vests. They should have jumped on that. You've got a guy you've caught really three times. And this guy, the gun owner, the shop owner, what a guy, went forward and called twice. And they still didn't do nothing. There's your problem. You don't need more laws.
You're right. Mark, and you know what else people tell me? That they are now able, with this new video capturing stuff that they have in the stores, they can capture that video immediately of that person. coming into the store, making the discussion, why wasn't the FBI immediately saying, well, we're going to capture that portion of your video?
And my point is,
nothing. There was no concern about it.
We want our listeners to get involved to vote. We want them to buy Made in America. You got to get involved when you see something wrong, too. You have to move forward. And then the authorities have to act on it. It's crazy they didn't grab this. They had three great opportunities. Blew it.
Yep.
So years ago, in the 60s and 70s, when something like that happened, a candidate would stand up and say, this is wrong. We need to fix it. Here's maybe one approach, whatever. And instead, in today's visceral political environment, the response is that, you know, this is broken and it's her fault. This is broken and it's his fault. This is broken and it's the Democrats' fault. This is broken and it's the Republicans' fault. No, it's broken and we have a problem. Not the Democrats, the Dumbocrats or whatever Rich calls them, or not the Republicans. It's not a visceral issue. The issue is we have a problem and we need to fix it. And the country needs to demand that our political individuals repair issues like this. Fix it.
Larkin.
Don't stand around. They can't even pass a budget.
Yeah. Now, I belong to a club, a conservation club. I'm sure every one of you belong to some type of club or even the listeners. And you get your group, your handful of people that do the work there. Then you get all the guys that tell them how it's done wrong, all the problems they bring up. They even sometimes get the best guy there is out of the club, but they never replace him. So my point is a lot of people find, you know, they have problems with things, but they don't get involved. They don't come up and compromise like you're talking about. Even in my shop environment, even with my 70 employees, staying positive, noticing, recognizing a challenge or a problem, and then coming up with a solution, try things. So you're dead on what has to happen.
That's called leadership, and that's what I'm saying. We have this enormous void in leadership and both sides of the aisle. Are the people that are there now capable of leading? Maybe. I don't know. I really don't know. All I know is that their caucuses and their leadership has taught them your first response is it's the Democrats' fault. Your first response is it's the Republicans' fault. And proceed with the blame. And just make sure everybody understands that we have great ideas and they have miserable ideas. The congressman told a story last night of Tip O'Neill, and I kind of shook my head and said, you know, everybody knows Reagan and Tip and la, 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 la. And he said, no, it went a little bit deeper than that. Everybody liked Tip O'Neill, and Tip O'Neill liked everybody. And they worked behind closed doors, and they compromised, and they got stuff done. But in the end, they all sat down in a big auditorium and drank beer together and were thankful that they lived in a free country. That doesn't happen anymore.
No, that doesn't happen. And, you know, we have so many people in America. We have the convention coming into Philadelphia in just a few weeks. And all these groups, there's so many groups planning what they're not going to do. They're protesting this. They're protesting that. They're having beans for Hillary and everything else. They're planning this. It went from 20,000 people to 100,000 participants, but not one protest to say we want our jobs back. This is the thing that amazes me. I'm looking at the list of protesters. We want free this. We want more schooling. We want the school loans canceled. We want, you know, we're going to have beans for Hillary. 100,000 people on 20 streets. But where is the protest for jobs? Get our industries back.
It's all political now. It's just, it's not, there isn't a let's fix this. There's a... You know, if we show up at enough Trump rallies with characters that are going to protest and scream and yell, it's only going to cost us $20 a head. And if we can get a couple thousand people there, it's really going to show America that America hates Trump. Yeah, come on, man.
You know, guys, I want to say this to you. I really think that we have to urge people to register to vote. There are still the people who come out in the primaries. That's category one of the voters. The people who come out in the general election are the general category of voters. And we have to appeal to them. No matter how they vote, I want the majority of the people. If we could get 65% to 80% of the voters out, then we have a clear picture what people in America really want. And if the people don't come out, they have to be satisfied with what the people who came out, the choices that they made. This is the most dangerous election I've ever seen in my life because Michael. Issues are not being discussed that I need to discuss. When people come in to see me and they say, can you refer me to a place that's offering jobs and this and that? It used to be easy. 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 12 years ago, it was much easier. Today it's difficult because I'd have to send them like what's written on Mark's shirt. Go to China. That's where you're going to have to make a new life. I understand they got a lot of luxury apartments and all, and they're looking, you know, to fill those places. So go over there because our leadership has forgotten about America. Yes, Mark.
The plan should be set. There should be 10 of the top challenges listed. And like we always talk about, the plan and then these candidates, they tell us their plan to take care of number one challenge, number two challenge, number three challenge, right? And that's what we want to hear. We don't want to hear them talking about themselves. And Larkin, I think you're dead on. You know, that's what's going to be going on, right?
And that is, unfortunately, unless the people, like the news media, I'll be very honest, speaking with the news media, they said this election, they are looking for it to be a very a big money election because they will be getting all sorts of ads. And a lot of those ads will be throwing mud one way or the other. Now, I would like to see the ads showing the qualities, what qualifies that person to be the job, take the job, rather than just get the job because you were able to flog the other one with more commercials and more ugliness.
Michael, Larkin, when you added, Larkin, you said before if the Congress can read, I think we just created a new commercial with a bunch of Congress standing outside saying, Hooked on Phonics worked for me. I question if they can. What I question is, does the average elected official have even a scintilla, a tiny amount of in touch with the constituents, the electorate, in touch with people other than the lobbyists, the donors? And here we are now, and this is the only time, guys, if I may, that I want to take a little bit of credit for something. Years and years before we all knew each other, when I got politically involved and I started to try to pay attention to things and in my journalist days try to be objective, I thought years ago that the seeds were planted that if the Republican Party kept leading with these social issues and the Democrats just kept planting the seeds to move further and further left, what we were going to basically have is a sort of almost a nonviolent version, although now, unfortunately, we're seeing it become violent, of a new American Civil War where there was going to be these clashes. I mean, look at a guy, you know, Larkin, look at a candidate like Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz was a candidate, the second most popular of the Republicans, who led his campaign rallies saying things about how even if a woman's raped, should have a child. Ted Cruz, if he were nominated, would have done a little better than Walter Mondale. Do you guys know how many states Walter – I know Larkin knows this. Larkin, remember how many states Walter Mondale won?
I think one.
One state.
Yeah.
One state. He won one state. And that was the second most popular. Now, were there things Ted Cruz said that I agree with that I thought were good? Yeah, sure. I thought a lot of those guys said things. Sanders says things that I agree with. I don't talk publicly about how I vote. My concern would be voting for him to remedy those things. But he says things that I agree with. So Jack Kennedy, he ain't walking through the door. Democrats, he ain't walking through the door. You know, Ronald Reagan ain't walking through the door. Part of the reason that Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill got along so well is because even Tip O'Neill, a guy who famously received a letter from Reagan with a bleeding heart on it, which I think is a funny story, Reagan sent O'Neill a letter with a bleeding heart on it. Even Reagan and Tip O'Neill got along, in part, guys, in part because even O'Neill knew that when you're working with a president as popular as Reagan was, you look like the idiot when you don't make the effort to work with that person, because then you're disrespecting all the voters who voted for him, including the Reagan Democrats. Which, Larkin, I got to tell you, I think there's still a group in this country of the Reagan Democrats. I do. And it's because I believe, Michael, that, and I'm going to say it again, I still think the majority of the country is more like-minded than not. But ultimately, the turnout is the thing that really tells us how into all of this people are. 2014, you had the lowest turnout in 7 decades. Yeah, I know it was a midterm. I know midterm election turnouts are low. But, Larkin, it's lowest in 7 decades? And we're all sitting around going, what the hell's going on? Now, I know all of us went out and voted. I know all of us pay attention.
Yeah.
And I know that. But what about everyone else?
Yeah, you know, we keep our most consistent thing we say is leadership. Besides Buy Made in America, leadership. When you look up leadership, look up level five leadership. And level five leader basically doesn't look out the window when things go wrong. They look in the mirror. And a level five leader is what we want to run this country. And it's best described in a book called Good to Great. And I don't read many, but I've read that many times. So, a Good to Great. Look it up, guys. But level five leader is what we need.
Very well said, Mark. Wow.
To further support what you've said, and to our listeners, if you have little children in the room, if you please send them out of the room for the next 90 seconds.
Geez, I just went out of the room, Larkin.
I don't want them to hear this. But I want you to close your eyes and think about Donald Trump being our next president. Or, in the same breath, close your eyes and think about Hillary Clinton being our next president. What kind of atmosphere is going to exist in Washington? What kind of atmosphere is going to exist in this country? You think it's visceral now. Holy mackerel.
Larkin, you know what I pictured? Was that little cartoon that was sent to me with Trump holding Hillary's hand.
Oh, that was a good one. I love that.
So I just think that if things don't change somewhere along the line here pretty quickly, what we're ultimately going to end up with is going to frighten us to death.
And it may happen. It may be 4 years of a horror show.
There was a visceral environment around Obama, and you know, we could talk about that until we're blue in the face, where it came from and why it lasted so long. There are some people that take the easy road out and say it is purely an issue of race. I don't think in this country that it is. Maybe in parts of this country, but I don't think as a general theme. But now we're going to have a non-politician and a lifelong politician, obviously a very intelligent businessman, a woman who has been a politician all of her living days. I don't know. It just frightens me that the outcome of this country at the end of that election is going to be a challenge to keep democracy going.
Yep.
That's pretty strong language.
It is. You're very right. And Larkin, you are absolutely correct. And I want to just add that the American people have had an opportunity to groom somebody for a number of years, just like they watched all of our businesses failing to modernize their industries in America. They said nothing. And by the way, Everybody personally saw what happened to America, its infrastructure, the buildings closing, no new modernized industries in America. And they said nothing. They always depended on national leadership. But most importantly, in the last 25 years, I'm sure Mark and Larkin and Rich and Henry and everybody will agree, what national elected official tried to get everybody at the table to stop the exodus of industries in America?
And Mike, on that, you know, we're watching this reality TV show. While that's going on, I'm trying to run a manufacturing business and this great Made in America action plan. And these times, in 2010, when I lost my oil and mining work, I lost my, it didn't snow, and I lost my military contracts and a job, half my business to China. We're in it right now, and I'm living it again because my oil and mining's gone. Presses, we make apple presses, I have none. It didn't snow, just to add some more excitement, which is nobody's fault. Mother Nature didn't show up. So this economy, my point, is very, very tough, and it's going to start surfacing as they talk about it. And we need action now, and unfortunately, we're talking about things they're going to talk about each other, these candidates. We got to get this going. We've got to get it going now. We've had 8 years. Larkin, you just said your friend was 29 years ago he retired, right? So he retired.
Yes,
we say 30-year mistake, right? So I think, you know, but the problem is we need action. We cannot go another 4 to 8 years like
we're
going.
That is why, Mark, I praise all of you guys, each and every one of you, for sticking in with our movement. Because believe it or not, we're talking the actual things that need to happen in this country while the other people are slinging mud at each other.
Well,
believe it or not,
spirit,
most
right?
of the people I speak to, they said they're getting tired of the whole election process. They can't wait till it's over. Whoever wins, they don't care. That's not a good attitude to have at this point. We haven't even gotten to the conventions, and already people are sickened from it.
Yeah, and it's going to be another one of those elections, I'm afraid, that is just going to be steeped with billions and billions of dollars being spent on the networks that are running this ridiculous news presentation of an election. And it's going to end up being name-calling, some name-calling, then more name-calling, then name-calling. And nobody is going to talk about solutions. And the person who finally does, one of those two candidates that steps up and starts acting presidential and starts addressing America, we have problems, and here's how I predict we fix some of them. I don't care if they agree with the way he or she's going to fix them. I don't care.
Try something.
It's just the fact that they take that approach, I think, is automatically going to attract voters to that individual. So it's time for one of the two of them to grow up and act presidential and ignore the name calling and the mudslinging and all the rest of the garbage that's going on. And let's talk about solutions. Let's talk about how we fix problems, not how we blame them on somebody else.
You're so right, Larkin. Wow, that was well said. Rich, what would you like to add to that? What would you do if you were advising the national candidates for president? What would you advise them they should focus on the next 4.5 months?
Well, the country, part of the fatigue, Larkin, is the never-ending stream of information, the never-ending news cycle, and that's unfortunately only going to get worse. And the thing, Michael, that I would say is what I tell my customers and clients who are business owners, which is understand your end-user market and always, always, always understand that your presentation is the thing that's going to get you in and out of the door. In that sense, this is the same principle, Larkin, that we apply in running for president as you do in advising a small business, right? Which is understanding your market and understanding how to create and package an offering that stands out and is unique.
And, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. You're 100%.
And Larkin, I mean, there's nothing that you said that is wrong. I mean, there's nothing you said that's incorrect. I just I hate the fact, and hate's a strong word, but for lack of a better one, I hate the fact that we're here. I hate the fact that there's us versus them. And I have my opinions about who I believe is really propelling and driving that. But all of the things that I thought could happen many, many years ago, and I take no joy or happiness or glee in being somewhat right about this, doesn't make me feel good. It makes me feel sad and depressed, actually, to be honest with you guys. It does. I mean, it doesn't keep me up in the middle of the night. I mean, I got a kid on the way that she'll keep me up in the middle of the night. So
this isn't this, but
we are here. And if I take somewhat of a business approach, Mark, you know, I come into some end users, and my God, are they a mess. And it's my responsibility, if I'm hired and employed to come in there, it's my responsibility to get these guys on the right track.
Rich, you streamline the process, right?
You have to get in there, and you have to have, and this is where I think Trump has done somewhat well with, you have to come in, and everybody's got to look in the mirror, and everybody's got to be honest with each other. They got to be honest with themselves. And we have moved away from this, Larkin. And what I mean by that is we've moved away because of the division, because of the politicians making a career out of politics and making it into their family business. We've moved away from this a little bit, where we've become more and more afraid to really talk about things for how they are. Either everything is incredible and amazing and wonderful, or the ship is sinking. And we have to understand, again, it's understanding the markets. Why are people thinking the way that they are? And for the Republican Party, sorry to beleaguer and reiterate this point, guys, but I think it's an important one. I think for the Republican Party, this is a bigger challenge for them, because I just think Republicans have to work a lot harder for their votes. And I don't think that the Democrats, on average, have to work as hard for their votes.
Rich and Mark, I want your opinion on this. I love the Constitution of the United States of America. I've read it. I believe the Constitution worked, and proof is Donald Trump is where he's at. What do you think about that? Non-political person is where he's at.
Well, our founders did not envision politicians to be career politicians. This is very this I believe is clear. And our Constitution is a legal contract. The reason that this country was founded as a republic and not a pure-style democracy is because our founders knew that a pure-style, Greek-style democracy was a terrible idea. You want to do away with freedom of speech? All you need, Larkin, is half plus one. You want to do away with the right to not incriminate yourself? Half plus one. The founders, see, they were smart about this because they understood history. They created a republic, which means that if 99% want to do away with the Second Amendment, it still doesn't go away. So then, now we're getting a little into this slippery slope, though, Mark, because now we're looking at it like how are certain factions in this country going to go after the Constitution? That is the basis for all of our individual liberties. That is the basis. We're coming up to our 240th anniversary in this country. And in 240 years, we've gotten personal individual liberties and free market, not perfect, but better than anywhere else ever in the world. Anywhere. Iraq is maybe the oldest civilization on the planet. How many guys, how many people do you know are fleeing America to move to Iraq?
Right.
Hopping the border. How many people do you know are hopping the border to get out of here and say, I'm going to leave behind everything I've got here and go? So, Mark, that's, you know, that whether or not I think that if, as we look at this election, ultimately what the founders wanted is to succeed or fail based on the will of the people. So in that sense, yes, it is in line with what you're saying.
Well, Rich, I'd only like to add to that is what we've been watching in the last 25, 30 years is the report card of what our national leaders didn't do to lead America to prosperity. And now, as a result of their poor leadership, our people are in poverty. We have 94 or 95 million people not in the workforce. We have the largest amount of people on food stamps ever imagined, regardless of how many people were in the country as a population. It's the largest amount of people, percentage-wise, needing government assistance. And this is very poor since the Depression. And this is very sad in a country where we can do anything we choose if we put our nose to the grindstone and keep ourselves focused. We just didn't, and we didn't have any leaders. They were worried about everybody else bringing the world to us, but not having the world be part of what we're offering as well.
Well, first of all, to Mark's question, Mark, I agree completely. I think Donald Trump is a product of the freedoms that the Constitution gives us, no question. But I think the situation that we have now with the imbalance in trade and the fact that Disney has no compunctions about firing all of its engineers and hiring people that aren't even citizens, you know, all of this is a product of greed. And when we became successful as a country, when we became, when we went through the 50s and it was so prosperous, and the 60s, we proved that the political system would work and we got in and out of a war without, causing the collapse of our country. It's been success on top of success on top of success. And I think this kind of success breeds greed.
It does.
And there's been an awful lot of greed going on. And so I don't think anybody made a decision to bring in 75% of their goods from Walmart because they wanted to throw people out of work. I just don't think they realized what it was going to do. And the ultimate decision was made steeped in greed.
Gentlemen, I hate to say this, but an hour has passed, and it's time for us to say farewell until next Wednesday at 11. I'm going to ask that we continue this conversation because I think that we're saying more positive things during our broadcast than we're hearing in a lot of the other media. I want to ask all of you to support our sponsors. I will acknowledge them each day during our daily broadcast and on our Saturday show again. But please do spread the word. Make sure when you go shopping at any of our sponsors, you let them know that you tune into our program. And I'm very pleased to hear from our sponsors that they do listen to the program and people are letting them know that they're supporting them as a result of them being part of our daily sponsors here on 860. You can listen to a rebroadcast of today's program a little later by going to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Until this Saturday at 11, my best wishes to you. Have a great one.
Thanks, everyone.
Have a great week, guys.